It's a freedom machine like no other, starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break. But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. Break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough, where we want you to break through those plateaus and ceilings in your service business so you can grow and scale to new levels of personal and financial success. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. You know, I read about this really fun tool in Success Magazine recently under the heading Time is Money. It's an online tool from Norway, as a matter of fact, where you can actually calculate how you value an hour of your spare time. Now, it looks at more than just salary. It looks at other factors like how long would you wait online for a gift certificate, or how much would you demand in overtime, assuming you were working in a company, in demand and overtime to work on a holiday weekend. The website is sparetime.archivert. That's weird. ARKIVERT.NO. sparetime.archivert.NO. And where I think that's a great metaphor for small business owners is we don't always understand the value of our time. We think, oh, I can't afford to hire someone to take a particular thing off our plates. But then when we have it on hours, it's taking us away from so many other things that we would or could or should or really would prefer to be doing. So it's a fun tool. Check it out, sparetime.archivert.no. And I know that sometimes, hey, time is at a premium and you don't always get the opportunity to listen to the Business Breakthrough podcast. So make sure you sign up to get our executive summary, which you can skim through really quickly. Get that now at businessexponential.com. Just go there and get signed up. And now for our guest. Stephanie Shalofsky is a professional organizer in New York City. I know her through a networking group here. And what I like about her is not just her focus and understanding of small companies, but it's really encapsulated in her tagline, which is transforming combat zones into comfort zones. Get that? Combat zones into comfort zones. So she really understands, wow, what a mess a small business environment can be, and how it takes a certain discipline and professionalism and project management thinking to really get everything moving from disorganized to organized to help us accomplish more, do more in less time, and freeing us up to do the bigger tasks. You know, the stuff that we're talking about here on Business Breakthrough, the bigger things that make sense for you as the CEO of your business. And it's really hard to do any of that if you don't have a good system and a good process for keeping all of that information overload at bay as your business is growing and scaling. And that's what I'm looking forward to exploring with Stephanie on Business Breakthrough today. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
You know, as I'm sure you know, having seen this many, many times, if you don't have a good system for managing information when things are smaller and more manageable, the likelihood that it improves as your business grows, probably not likely. And you've probably seen that there are problems in communication. Certainly there are reliability issues if you have things in seven different places. So what are some of the ways you've seen business information get really unruly as companies grow?
Well, I think that one of the most important things that companies need to consider, especially as they're growing, is to take a moment and put retention guidelines in place, because this really helps control the information and manage it and ensure that it's available when needed. It's very important to know what the guidelines are and for the team to know what the guidelines are so that things are kept when they're needed, because if it's left to their own devices, staff usually will either do one of two things. They'll either start trying to file stuff, or they'll just say, you know, no time to do it. I'm not going to do anything with it. So you either have a situation where everything is kept, or you have a situation where bare bones information is kept and you might not even have the final executed agreement of a document that's really needed. Also, I've found that a lot of times there's not a centralized filing system, so that people will either start creating their own little filing system so that you have a lot of redundancy then, and you have multiple copies of the same thing be kept in multiple places. So that's not very efficient either. And lastly, you have a situation where if people really aren't into the filing mode, you get lots of piles of papers and stuff collecting. And the piles grow very quickly, and needless to say, you can't find things when you need them. And that issue aside, you're creating a very cluttered, unprofessional-looking space that doesn't really convey the right impression when you have clients or other business partners coming into the office for meetings.
Right. And it certainly doesn't help the thought process. So you touched on three really important things. And let's go back and dig in just a little bit more one at a time. The first, as you mentioned, retention guidelines. Essentially, that's what are you hanging on to and for how long are you hanging on to it? So what are some of the categories of things? And obviously, there are legal issues around that as well. So you want to be sure that you're holding on to important corporate documents, certainly contracts for at least 6 years, tax returns anywhere between 7 and 10 years. But what are some of the other like day-to-day processes like emails and things like that?
In terms of how long to keep them? Or whether to keep them? I'm not sure I follow your
question. Just in terms of what are some of the guidelines that you've seen? How do you even handle it? How do you think it through in terms of, well, what do I do with an email once I've responded to it, for example?
Okay, well, I think a lot of this comes down to creating a digital filing system, very much like you would have on the paper side. So it's a matter of defining what should be kept, and that a lot of times needs to be a team decision or potentially an upper management decision in terms of guiding staff accordingly so everybody knows what they should be keeping. And basically then setting up a filing protocol within the email system so that very much like in a paper system, you have file folders or sections for, you know, clients and, you know, potentially business partners and other types of activities that you're involved in, and actually moving the emails into those particular file folders so that you can easily find them when you need to.
Great. And I would think that also dovetails in with what kind of storage systems are you using to make sure that, as you say, you don't have one person having a filing system on their computer and someone else having a filing system on their computer, and you end up with 3, 4, 5, 12 different filing systems when it really does need to be centralized. So in terms of guidelines, what are some of the items that fall under guidelines? So, you know, you mentioned emails. What other kinds of things have you seen come up?
In terms of guidelines, obviously there are emails you need to keep, but there's also a lot of stuff that comes in either via, you know, paper form or actually an email that you've sort of alluded to some of them. In terms of information, I typically tell clients to get specific guidelines relative to the length of time to keep things from their financial and legal advisors. But once they have that information, then it's keeping an eye out for, you know, the lease, the contracts with key suppliers or with clients, you know, business formation documentation, employment agreements, and the like. And on the financial side, there's a whole host of things that you need to hold on to, you know, for tax purposes, you know, starting with your tax returns and then your payable files, your receivable files, you know, credit card statements and expense reports, insurance policies and things like those, as well as, you know, asset information in terms of what the company's actual physical assets are and having all that collected in one place. And lastly, on the HR payroll side, there's a whole host of information that really needs to be kept. Some of it will be hard copy, some of it will be electronic, but it's everything from employees' files to payroll reports to tax reporting documentation like W-4s and the 940s and 941s and other related types of information.
Great. And can you give us an example of how have the companies you worked with come up with retention guidelines? And without divulging anything confidential, can you give us an example of what that process looked like to develop those systems?
Sure. It's got to be a team effort, I should say, where there's a certain amount of, you know, legal financial guidance that is applied. But then It's a matter of within each department, the members of that team getting together and identifying the types of information they manage and identifying what items on that list really need to be retained and how long they need to be retained for. Because you could have, you know, a marketing, within the marketing area, you know, a creative group which has lots of files for layouts of promotional materials, packaging, or whatnot. So it's very different from what you're going to have going on in the finance group. So very, very much keeping everybody involved in the process. And once the final guidelines are set, making sure that they're shared across departments, because there is information that is distributed across departments, and it's very important to know who's going to be responsible for actually making sure that information is actually retained, because you don't want six copies of the same thing in six different places. So it's very important to apply something like the originator's rule in that kind of situation, because then it becomes the responsibility of the person originating the original document to retain it. So at least you have a go-to spot for finding it and, you know, for storing it.
Wonderful. That's a really great idea, the originator's rule. So what other kinds of procedures have you found or helped clients put into place that you found helpful in developing these kinds of retention and filing systems?
Aside from that, basically, some of this, once you set the guidelines, it's a matter of actually starting to practice them, because I find that in a conceptual situation, you know, it's very easy to say, brainstorming, oh, we should do this, 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 and this, and it sounds like a great idea, it sounds like you covered all the bases, you know, it should be the perfect system. But usually there's not a perfect system until you test drive it and you actually then go back and tweak it, because life is changing, companies' directions are changing, the type of information they're managing changes and varies as directions and circumstances start impacting what's going on. So it's very important to actually test what you've put together and then modify it and tweak it, you know, either initially or over time as you apply it, just to make sure it's always vital and applicable to what the situation is within the company.
So in terms of procedures around how information is managed, used, and sorted, when you come up with these guidelines, where do you keep them? What do you do with them? How do they get communicated?
Well, the best way to communicate them, first off, is to have a team meeting, basically a company meeting, and share them with everybody. First, verbally explaining what they are, because you can't always rely on people to actually read information that's distributed to them via email. So first, having a meeting where the basic premise is discussed and explained and questions can be answered, and sometimes hearing things starts to reinforce the message in terms of what we're doing and what you really need to keep and what you're allowed to just let go of. Because a lot of the time in these kinds of situations, you're really giving people the permission to get rid of some stuff that they might have otherwise kept. So that's really important. And once you've had a sort of a face-to-face kind of situation where the process has been explained and the guidelines explained, then I always suggest emailing the information so everybody can have their own personal copy to refer to as needed. And then a lot of companies have, you know, file servers, which are the central digital filing cabinet for all the company information and the day-to-day operation of what's going on. And keeping a copy in a central location within that file server is always good, so people can go back and refer to it. And as new staff comes on, part of their orientation should include, you know, by the way, we have retention guidelines, and this is where you find a copy so that you can learn what's appropriate, what's to be kept, what's not to be kept, and, you know, make it all part of their onboarding process.
Right. And who do you find within smaller businesses is usually responsible for making sure that the system is being used and is being followed?
Well, a lot of times in a smaller situation, there's an office manager or potentially the CFO or somebody in that kind of general position who is charged with the responsibility for this particular area.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. So it doesn't always have to be the business owner.
Well, typically they don't have the time. You know, they may be involved in actually setting the whole thing up to begin with, which sort of makes sense. But once it's set, then the actual execution doesn't necessarily fall within their, you know, bandwidth because they've got more important things to be doing.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So can you talk a little how, I mean, it seems like it's a lot of busy work, but My sense is that there's a lot of benefit in terms of landing and keeping better clients, to make the case for why having that solid information management process can help you keep clients, bring on better clients, and have a stronger business.
Sure. I think the most important reason for doing so goes to giving your clients that superior customer service experience, because we all need to keep and maintain our relationships with our current client base as we continue to grow and bring on new clients. And if we have a good information management system in place, we can very promptly address any inquiries that we receive for information concerning potentially our agreement with the client, a payment issue, a recent phone call where they were asking for something, or that maybe there was a problem that had to be addressed. With a good system in place, the information is basically at your fingertips. So within seconds, you can respond to your client, give them the information they need, address the situation, and everybody's happy at the end of that day because it was very quickly, promptly, and professionally addressed.
Great. And what have you seen as some of the bigger mistakes or pitfalls that companies run into when they're trying to wrap their hands and minds around all of this and come up with the processes?
It's basically been a situation where it's something that's sort of backburnered. You know, it's not deemed necessarily as important as other maybe business development issues or other challenges the company is facing, especially as they're growing and getting more on more solid footing. So it's something that's just sort of, okay, we'll deal with that tomorrow kind of thing. But unfortunately, tomorrow comes and it's still not dealt with because there's always something more important to do or something more interesting or something more exciting or challenging. So it's something that, you know, it's not necessarily a favorite topic or favorite project. So it is something that's avoided. And unfortunately, when companies are growing, they really need to put into place a really solid foundation on lots of different levels. And, you know, dealing with their information is, you know, should be up there with some of the other issues they're dealing with.
Right. So some of the information that comes in through email.
Mm-hmm.
And it can seem like an absolute avalanche every day. You figure, all right, I kind of have my inbox under control. And then you turn off the computer and you come back and again in the next morning and an entire avalanche has just flooded it. Can you share with us some top tips on how to triage that so that we're being efficient in our time, we're addressing what needs to be addressed, and perhaps maybe even automating some systems for getting rid of the garbage?
Right. Okay. Well, first off, I think there's an interesting stat that I just wanted to share.
Please.
And this will just, you know, further confirm that, you know, email is a problem. I just recently read that the average number of business emails that are sent and received each day is 131. Some people might have more, some people might have less. So that's quite a few emails. And this is only business emails because people usually have a business and a personal account. So there's a lot of email activity going on during the course of any one given day. So if we focus exclusively on the business piece of it for the moment, I would suggest the following. First off, and I see this a lot, people will be going through their emails and, you know, reading messages and going from one to the next. And a lot of the messages usually bring tasks with them that need to be addressed. Some of the tasks are really quick and easy, so you can respond in 2 minutes and you're done with it and you can move on to something else. Some of the tasks, though, are going to take more time, so you can't necessarily stop what you're doing to start focusing on them. A lot of people will just leave these unread messages sitting in their inbox, which means that with the rate with which emails collect, before you know it, there's a whole bunch of new messages that have been added to the box. This message is now getting lost in a flood of new messages that have to be read, or maybe other messages that have been read but are still sitting there that require some kind of action. So the tasks then get overlooked until all of a sudden that little voice in the back of your head starts saying, what about that, you know, project we needed to do? And then that's usually at 3 o'clock in the morning where you're not going to get up and do anything about it. So what I usually tell clients is to not use their inbox as a to-do list, to basically, when this kind of situation arises, to move that email into an email folder labeled to-do or whatever verbiage makes sense for you so that it's safe, it's in a place where you know where it is, and then add that task to your to-do list so that you can proactively schedule time to work on it when it's convenient and when it makes sense. so that it's not overlooked, it gets done, and, you know, life goes on. So that's one really important tip that I usually share with clients. Another one, which is a little bit more of a basic one, and it goes to just being a little bit more efficient with email, is when you're writing an email subject line specifically, I encourage clients to make them very specific and actionable. So anybody that is receiving that email and is either scanning their emails on their phone or even scanning their emails on their computer can very quickly get a sense of what that message is about and what response or action is going to be required on their part so that they can then in turn prioritize their time effectively and efficiently as it relates to responding to that email.
So can you give an example of what might be actionable versus not?
Okay, actionable meaning like, when I say actionable, I mean using an action verb in the subject line if there's something required from the recipient. Like, for instance, this is a really simple one. It'd be like something like, sign insurance policy on 3-2.
Okay.
You know, so it's very clear that the person receiving that email knows they need to sign this document on the 1st of March. They don't have to do anything today, but they know next Tuesday they need to do something.
Right, so that's very different from like a follow-up email after a networking event, hey, great to meet you, which, as you say, somebody can then say, all right, that's not as urgent, it's nice to hear from them, but there's nothing in particular that I need to do at that moment.
Right, or it could be something like schedule meeting and putting a day and a potential time so that, you know, you're putting out there exactly what you're asking. And that could be, you know, relevant in the networking scenario you just suggested.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. And, you know, and I appreciate the not using the inbox as a to-do list, because I had been very good for a time about moving things to Asana for tasks. And I suddenly realized it creeps back in.
Right.
Because there are a couple of emails sitting there and they've been there for the better part of this week. And I've left them there because that's the habit. So.
Right. Well, that's what happens.
Well,
life happens. You mm-hmm. know, it's life happens and, you know, you just kind of get a little derailed, and that's with all different types of organizing tasks and protocols. And it's just recognizing when it's happening and getting the train back on the track, so to speak.
Right, right. So any last tips or ideas on what we most need to manage and maybe some elegant and simple ways to go about doing that when it comes to the information flooding into our business?
What we most need to manage? Well, we most need to manage A, ourselves, and B, then the flood of information coming at us. And if we can manage ourselves to the extent that we address the information, we don't let it just pile up and clutter our inbox or our desktop or our desk, then we are in a better position to actually address it and be more efficient and productive. And by the same token, then we're making sure that we're retaining what we need to keep. We know where things are, and everybody is happier and less stressed, because there's nothing worse than somebody in an upper management position looking for a specific document and not being able to find it, and nobody around them being able to immediately say, here it is. You know, that's the situation you want to avoid.
Absolutely.
So these are preventative measures, basically.
Terrific. Great. So, Stephanie, last thoughts before we close out regarding managing information, staying organized?
Well, as I alluded to just a few minutes ago, I think it's really important to be on top of all of your information, just for the various reasons we've already discussed, but also recognizing that to do so, you need to, in all probability, adapt some new habits. And habits take a little while to take and become routine. But once they do, life is very much more efficient and productive. However, as we were just talking about relative to email, at times we get busy and, you know, the habits that we form that were working great for us, you know, aren't working because we're not really applying them the way we used to. So then it's a matter of really taking a step back and recognizing that now we have, you know, 300 extra emails sitting in our inbox that shouldn't be there, and we need to just make time to address the situation and get everything back on track so we're very much more efficient. Because this happens to everybody, and to take it personally and just figure, you know, you're a lost cause and it's just you and you just can't do it is not necessarily the right answer. It's just recognizing that stuff happens and then we just need to address it and move forward.
Terrific. Stephanie, just the reminders, first of all, that there are easy ways to manage that email inbox, but how important it is in terms of creating the systems in our business so that as our staffing changes, as our needs change, not only can we access it, but we're also able to bring other people into the fold much more easily from an onboarding process. And that's absolutely crucial as we grow and scale and also protect our downside from liability.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you don't want information leaving, you know, as you have turnover and, you know, the person that knew how to do everything isn't there anymore. And then, you know, what do you do?
Yes, that's an excellent, excellent point that the institutional knowledge, if you will, should stay with the company, not just be in the head of individual employees or contractors as they may be walking out the door.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so great reminder. Well, Stephanie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Hey, thanks for listening. Remember, go over to businessexponential.com right now and download our 10 Steps to a $1 Million Business. We lay it out for you step by step, the 10 building blocks that'll have you building and growing your business so it's not so dependent on you. Won't that be a relief? Of course it will. So do it right this minute so you don't forget. You'll see it there on top of the homepage. Go to businessexponential.com.